Mitchell.
Hey, buddy.
How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing well.
Dude, all right. Just well? Yeah. Not. I mean, it's warmer
not
outside.
Not exceptionally well.
It's real. I got shorts on again, finally.
Well, you know, I had the flu.
Yeah, you did have the flu.
And then I have just lingering things. I'm very grateful for my health and for being well again, yeah. But I'm not 100%, so then I have some discontent.
Some discontent.
Lingering discontent.
Well, at least you're not in bed with the flu.
Probably some podcasts I can go back and listen to. Lower my expectation and increase my commitment and be less of a curmudgeon. But that's not the topic for
today. That's not the topic. We're in week two of three of this series that we're entitling How Can I Help? And it's about how can we help people in certain situations that we find ourselves in, so people we care about that are in certain situations. And this week we're really talking about anger. So I want to know from you, what is like what seems to be like a silly pet peeve that just makes you angry?
I'm not an angry elf.
I've seen you angry a couple times.
Yeah. Oh, here's one. Here's one that does that. Ridiculous wastes of time and resources. Mm. Whenever, like, and maybe we'll get into this too later on. But you know, sometimes people very clearly asking you in a consultant way for advice, recommendation, input,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then you provide good, founded, insightful, objective input,
yeah,
and recommendations.
Yep.
Only to realize it was a complete and utter waste of time and resources
because
they're like, yeah, no, I'm not going to do that. Right? And
yeah,
you're like,
yeah,
okay, next time, just don't do anything and leave me out of it.
Yeah.
Just leave me out of it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And actually, I think we might get into that a little bit more next week.
Okay.
Which will be interesting. But I'm with you on that. It's like, well, we've had a couple work meetings where it's been like, all right, hey, I need your brain for a minute, right? And you're like, all right. And then you spin, yeah, I'm not gonna do any of that. You know? But I do enjoy the brainstorming, you know. We had an event here for the youth last night, and we were talking about kind of this call and response thing, right? And I'm like, oh, you should do this, you should do that, you should do this. You did none of them.
Yeah, that's true.
But I did have fun doing it. So I guess I'm the opposite of that. Like, as long as I go into it knowing you'll not take any of my advice, then I guess I'm okay with it. Would you say that's the same thing to you? Like, if I came to you and said, Mitch, I need your advice. Forewarn, I might not take any.
Yeah, and maybe that's what I do too. I think I should probably be more clear of, hey, this is what I'm thinking and planning. I need you, you know, and be more clear. I would like you to say, no, that sucks. Or, yeah, I think that'll be fine. I'm not looking to innovate.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I need to be more, I probably need to be more clear sometimes whenever I do that, because I think,
you didn't want the innovation.
Yeah.
Oh, Mitch, you wasted my time.
I don't know.
Now I'm angry at you. I'm not angry.
You got the anger wheel, the wheel of emotion.
The wheel of my brother was over at the house and looked at that. It's on our refrigerator, and he was like, "What's that?" I'm like, "Let me tell you about the wheel of emotion.
The feeling wheel.
I not to try to repeat what I probably have said probably half a dozen times at least on the show, but there's two things that really make me angry, and they involve the same thing.
Okay.
Toilet paper.
Ooh, yeah.
I really dislike it when someone uses the last bit of toilet paper and it's just the cardboard.
Mm-hmm.
And they get a new toilet paper roll out and set it on top of the cardboard.
Mm-hmm.
They don't replace it.
Yep.
Terrible. Mm-hmm. That's number one. And then number two is when they do replace it, I need my toilet paper to go over. So you pulled down on it from above, not
up against the wall.
Under, up against the wall where you're pulling down on it underneath it. I don't. Drives me insane.
You know, and I wonder too if it's additionally frustrating just because of the times we find ourselves in. Here's the times we find ourselves in, Keith. Toilet paper holders come off the wall 3 inches. They have for the last 50 years.
Mm.
But guess what? Toilet paper rolls now only come in super mega jumbo.
Mega, mega jumbo.
There's no other option.
Select
super mega, mega, mega jumbo huge.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it is going, it is.
Even the cheap toilet paper comes everything. In mega.
Yeah. Everything is just smashed against the wall.
Mm. And it rubs again for the first like few laps or whatever. It just rubs up against it. Oh, terrible.
Take the paint off.
Terrible. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why it's so toilet paper focused with my anchor.
I don't know. I have one similar to that. We've talked about it before as well. The booby trap trash can. Do not take the trash can and turn it into a house of cards. I don't need it. Balance act of like, that's neat that you could get the yogurt container to balance on top of the broken clothes hanger that's stuck inside the Cheerio box that's hanging up a foot and a half above the trash can.
Mm-hmm.
That's neat that it balanced there, but at some point that's going to fall. Like,
yeah.
Or the guy that takes the trash bag out isn't even going to have enough residual bag left to get it
to get it in. Yeah.
And then you're sticking your hand on top of the precariously
getting a fistful of yogurt
or the pancake that's got the syrup on it that's stuck to the thing.
Yes.
But you got to squish it down into the actual trash.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, does your trash can have a lid?
No.
Because the same thing happens, which I dislike, which is when the kids pop open the trash can and it's full, but they pile it on top of it and then they close the lid and the lid squishes onto the syrupy pancake.
Oh, yeah.
So then when you go to open it up, you open up the lid and it's got a syrupy pancake stuck to it.
That still falls under the classification of booby-trapped trash can.
I agree.
Or
when you put, somebody doesn't replace the trash bag, and then so then they just put the trash to the side of the trash can. Mm. That happened to me this morning. Three kids threw three things away, but just put it on the lid of the trash can.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Because there's no bag in it. And so I'm like, all two of the three kids know how to put a trash bag in the can.
Well, here's one. As we're on the trash can topic.
I'm getting angry right now.
I know.
Ramped
up. I've spent enough time in the custodial arts with trash can bags in the industry. We call them liners.
Liners.
Have you ever been camping and you have the dew and the tent's covered in dew and you're inside and you're just fine, but then if you touch the wall...
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of a sudden, like, moisture came through the tent, and you really don't know how it happened?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this will happen with trash can liners. So, when you pull out the trash can liner, I refuse to set it down.
Oh, don't set it down. You can't, and you got to get it outside quick.
Straight, right?
Yes, correct.
So, I do not set it down. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. You pull out the trash bag.
Go right to the door.
Right to the trash barrel, right?
It is
a out and back 60-second activity.
Get your shoes on first.
Of course.
Right?
60-second activity at max, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then when you come back, maybe a little Lysol.
Yeah.
Maybe
keep
then, it fresh. Then a new liner. You know, some things like that. But it's when you come back. I could be like the only person in the house. And then when I come back 60 seconds later, like there's trash in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like, where'd that come from? Where'd it come from?
Yeah. Or when the kids take it out and they set the bag down and open the door and then take it out. And now I got a sticky wet spot by the front door. So now I got to get the mop out and mop it. Like created more. I should have just taken the trash out. It would have been less work for me.
Yeesh.
So did you know, and I know you know this because we've talked about the wheel of emotions, anger. And I didn't learn this until maybe like 4 or 5 years ago, and I thought it was a little bit life-changing.
I thought you were going to say after the second video came out of what was your Halloween character? You're Angry Bob.
Angry Bob.
Yeah.
Yeah. Being angry or anger is actually a secondary emotion. It's not a primary emotion.
There's
a thing behind the thing. You're angry because of something else. So maybe you get embarrassed. And that makes you angry, right? Maybe somebody jumps out and says boo, and you got scared and did something funny, and you're angry about it, right? Well, it's because you were scared that you were, you know what I mean? Like,
okay,
there's always a secondary emotion behind it,
or ahead of it, or primary.
So, like, you know, in these instances, like, well, obviously, what we've kind of described are kind of pet peeves, but can you think of a time when you were actually really angry about something, and what was that primary emotion that you can remember that you were really more angry about? Whatever
is frustration.
Frustration can be a primary.
You know, I think like unknown, like lack of control. I'm trying to think of like the primary. I should have brought my
wheel. We should have done way more preparation for this podcast.
Yeah, that makes me angry. It's stuck on the bulletin board right over there.
I can tell you one of mine. You ever tell your kid to do something and they don't do it? And then later,
didn't I just say frustration?
Yeah. So my oldest, who's in middle school, she's better at it this year than she was last year for sure. But like it's almost always on a Monday that she will call me from school because she forgot something. Right. And so we got on this habit of, okay, Sunday night, get everything that you need together for school, you know, and put it by the door. Get your backpack ready. Find out if it's an A day or a B day, if you're going to have gym or what, you know, whatever. Get your gym stuff together. Get your clarinet together, like whatever, right? And like when she doesn't do that and then calls me Monday and says, I forgot my gym bag, you know. Can you bring it to me? Right. I get a little spark of anger because it's like, I told you to do this, right? And it's really to your point, it's really that frustration. It's like, hey, I told you to do this. You could have gotten this. Now I have to go out of my way to get this taken care of, right? And anger isn't the emotion. It's the frustration of, we've talked about this. We've worked through this, you know? And that's really the thing. How about you?
Yeah, I like that one. That one's like when we're helping people, you know, primarily our kids, you know, develop, and they've got the tools in the tool belt, and they just use the wrong one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, not everything needs a hammer, right?
Yes.
And, yeah.
Yeah. You're like, we've worked through this. We've worked through this before. Let me tell you again. So how about Jesus says, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. And just to kind of reference this for people, you know, Jesus isn't saying within there being a peacemaker of just being, hey, everything's okay, everything's okay, everything's okay, mm-hmm. but actively trying to resolve conflict, right? Actively trying to create peace by maybe seeing a conflict, seeing the situation, and going and helping with that situation, making peace, right? And so how does this idea of peacemaking in today's world, along with sometimes our natural inclination to avoid conflict, how do we work through that? Because you're not a big conflict guy.
No, I think I'm really good at this because I have empathy as a top five strength of mine. I kind of have my natural ability to intuit how someone else might be feeling within reason is pretty good,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So that I am very grateful for. So I don't have a whole lot of anger and frustration that grows out of, I just don't understand you, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
I don't have that.
Why would you do this?
Yeah.
What would ever come across your mind?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot of that reactivity because I see how we got here. I understand.
Yeah.
You know,
sure.
I can see how that happens. I have a lot of grace for that naturally baked in to just how I process the world, to which I'm eternally grateful. I think that gives me an opportunity to help navigate in this peacemaker, as a peacemaker in that capacity, it's an easier arena for me to step into.
Yeah, but you're not. I like conflict.
You love it.
I love it. I love
you like a good debate.
I like, but see, for me, it's not sometimes it's not emotional for me,
mm-hmm.
right? I don't like conflict. I don't like conflict where it's highly emotionally charged for me. Conflict, maybe for you, you know, like I say something or do something that I'm like, you know, I'm not trying to be conflicting, but you just take it the wrong way or whatever. Like, you know, like I enjoy those that conflict, you know, moment. And I think that, you know, working in customer service for a really long time in my career and dealing with people, the general public or whatever, I've had my fair share of moments of conflict,
of de-escalation. Yeah.
And I know when I'm in those moments, I can go down this path and de-escalate it, or I can go down this path and escalate it further. Like, I'm highly aware of, you're aware of emotions. I'm aware of, I can go down these two paths and make this thing awesome or make this thing go away. Right. You know what I mean? And so for me, I don't mind the conflict, but I think about other people in my world. Shout out to my wife, if she's listening, hates conflict, like absolutely shuts down around conflict. Right. Whether it's directed towards her or just happening around her. Right. Like, that meme of like Homer Simpson where he like blends back into the bushes, you know, like that's, if she could do that in real life, like two people are arguing and she just goes, whoop, you know, she would in a heartbeat. So how, for her, if somebody like her who is similar to you and can put herself in other people's situations and kind of understand that, but like truly hates to be around there, how does then somebody like her live into this being an active peacemaker in these situations?
A lot of times I feel like this is a skill I've, you know, cultivated and developed a little bit of, and we would get into some of the stuff, and the different ways of helping others, even if you're directly in the conflict or you're indirectly involved, mm-hmm. helping somebody process the conflict. Usually people a primary thing to do is let everyone be heard, right? Like if you can just allow the space and opportunity for someone to fully verbalize and voice, you know, and this would be an exaggerated version of, remember when your kids are real little before they had the ability to use their words, right? And they wanted to, and they would be, that was probably about the most angry we would become in our early life is because we couldn't communicate what it was that was so irritating.
No.
We couldn't communicate it, right? So I think if we dial it back and think of that way, allow people, if you're dealing with adults, if you're dealing with older children, if you're dealing with anyone who's got the capacity to use their words and verbally communicate their situation, their thoughts, feelings, emotions, allowing them to do that will usually de-escalate things and give it gives you some more perspective yourself whenever you've externally processed stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
How many times have you been super angry and then you tell somebody the story out loud and you're like, that was kind of dumb. Right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, you realize maybe, it yourself.
Maybe I might have been maybe this was an overreaction on my part. You may not want to admit it. But you've recognized that, well,
yeah,
that got a little carried away, right? I got a little carried away. But I found that to be one of the most helpful things is allowing that others to externally process exactly how the situation was perceived by them.
Yeah.
Right? You know, their eyewitness account of all the happenings, and they got to get it out there. And then if there's, and then you may have the opportunity to correct any.
And I'd be very cautious when someone, when you're doing this and you're listening to not amp them up, right? Like if I'm telling a story about blah, 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 and you're like, oh, wow. Oh, wow. Then what happened? Well, what'd you say next? Oh yeah, you got him. You know what I mean? Like, don't. Because you're just amping the anger up. Like listening, you can listen, but be careful not to
escalate
their own anger. Right? It's funny you were talking about kids before they learn to communicate. My great aunt, I don't know if we ever talked about this. My great aunt Wilma, we called her Aunt Ike. She had like 11 or 12 heat strokes in her lifetime. Right, and so it really took kind of a toll on her. On her physically, she couldn't move like half of her body, but mentally kind of took a toll on her too. And she would think of something, but couldn't get the word out all the time.
Okay.
And so, you know, she'd be cooking or something and she'd be like, hey, can you go get the, you know, and could visualize what she wanted and can think of the word, but couldn't say it. And so, you know, you'd be like, blueberries. No, she gets so angry with the wrong, you know, with the wrong thing. And it was kind of we never joked about it with her. Right. But like off to the side, we were always like it was kind of a game, you know, it was like a guessing game. But as soon as you figured it out, you know, she'd be like, yes, you know, and she'd get over her anger or whatever. But it's very similar to that. Right. Like there's something that she needed and she couldn't communicate. It couldn't verbalize it, you know. So I was just a funny story.
It's true. I think in general, a lack of inability to communicate externally what we got going on internally, is a major cause of anger.
And I think what you're talking about is, there's really three different roles that you can take in helping somebody through this emotional issue, right? And I think what you're kind of talking about is like being a counselor, right? Somebody that's there to listen, that's maybe not going to give advice per se, but maybe redirects some of that anger, listening, redirecting. I don't know if you've ever you know, sometimes you see these counselors or, you know, on TV or whatever, and they're, well, that was dumb or whatever. But in real life, a lot of them, they'll just ask you questions, right? Like, they'll listen and they'll ask you another question and they'll listen. And they're really just asking you questions to direct your own mind to realize this is what I need to do, right? And that's kind of what you're talking about, is listening to whatever happened and maybe asking a question, you know,
yeah,
through it, and letting people realize, well, maybe that was not as bad as I thought it was. So you got a counselor, and then you've got kind of like a coach.
Yeah. And I think these, unfortunately, kind of these terms, it's less about what term we're using and more about the additional role responsibilities that we're adding to this.
Correct.
Yep. Because I think a lot of actual counselors would say, no, coaching, and then you get into real counseling, right?
Yeah,
because, because like, you can have somebody just kind of being a life coach. They're not actually like really counseling.
No, right? Yeah, except for
and,
sure, for
and
sure.
And so, you know, it could be argued that maybe our terms are out of order, but the concept is we're going towards an escalation of input.
On our
correct part, right?
Yeah.
Go from listening and asking some questions to listening, asking some questions, and maybe offering some additional, more direct actions.
Yeah, and I think some of it's the follow-up too, right? Like, a coach is kind of in your corner, so maybe we'll follow up with you again, you know, in a week. Hey, how'd that turn out? You know, kind of thing, right? Where in the moment, a counselor is just there to listen and isn't really, maybe you're not really invested in that long term to like follow up with the situation, but a coach would, right? Because they're invested with you, right? And then, you know, the final thing would be like a consultant, somebody that you're going to and saying, hey, Mitch, I need your advice specifically on how to handle this situation. And so they're really coming to you and saying, I need your input, right? Because not everybody comes to you and says they need your input. Sometimes they just want you to hear this story about how it made them mad, right?
Want to do a little venting.
And I am terrible. I am personally terrible because I think everything's a consultant, all right? I think if you're coming to me to tell me about this, then you want my advice, right? You want me to
tell you what to do. And you're looking for, you believe everyone's looking for a solution.
Correct. Yes. Very solutions based, right? And so, and somebody that likes conflict, that actually likes to be in conflict, I'm always looking, even when I'm in conflict, I'm looking for the solution. How do we move past whatever this is, right? And I don't look at situations and say, oh, well, he was just angry with me at the moment, it'll be fine tomorrow, right? Like, I'm always trying to like, we need to work this out, when maybe it's just a momentary thing, right? So really three different situations. I obviously naturally gravitate to the consultant, even when I shouldn't. How about you? What do you typically think you gravitate towards?
Probably coaching is probably a natural, a natural spot for me to find my position in this. But it might be, depending on how you're defining it, maybe it is closer to the counselor side of things. I'm pretty decent at listening.
You are.
You know, I've learned enough that sometimes too, that, you know, the solutions, decisions that may produce solutions wouldn't produce the outcome in the way the person's wanting it. Mm-hmm. So it's not a viable option, right?
Right, right. What really should happen, they don't want to happen.
Yeah.
And so you're like, well, I'm just going to waste my energy on
this. So I'm trying to do better about recognizing which role I'm in.
Yeah, Yeah. I think you're probably more of a coach too, because there's a lot of times when we talk or I've seen other people talk to you and you kind of immediately, you don't give them advice, but you're like, ooh, you should read this book. Right? Mm. Like you almost kind of direct people towards like someone who could give them some advice, but you don't. Right? Like,
yeah, I will coach you towards counseling. If you have a counselor, maybe you should get one. But
so, yeah. That's it.
This is fine. And you said we're going to talk about this a little more in depth as the next couple weeks go by.
Yeah. One more week.
Okay.
We've got one more week of how can I help? And we're really going to look at next week about how can you help somebody in need?
Okay.
And so I think that a lot of these topics seem very similar, but they're really
nuanced.
They're really nuanced in some of the ways that you should approach it. So join us next week for how can you help somebody in need, and then we'll wrap up this series and start another one.
Wonderful. All right. This was fun.
See you.
Bye, guys.